Hey listeners, welcome to our podcast, where we drink really tasty coffee and we bring you the stories of people whose lives have been changed by God. We believe there is wisdom and learning from each person's story. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, relax and enjoy the conversation. This is Brewing Narrative.
All right, hello everyone. Halo. I said that weird. You can really tell that it's been a bit. But hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Brewing Narrative. My name is Landon. I am joined to my right by our amazing producer, James. Mr. Ryan, over there across the table. To my left, Matt.
What's up?
And then our special guest for today, Reggie Cross. What's up, dude?
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
It's going good. So it's been a bit. How long has it been?
A bit.
About 4 weeks.
What is a bit? Four weeks.
So it's a preface, because you guys can't see us. We've been doing Zoom podcast, Zoom recordings for our last two episodes were Zoom recordings. So this is like the first time we've met in person. So I would say whatever that is, minus two.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really good to be back with you guys in person. Loved Zoom. Like, it was cool.
You're just not trendy, Landon.
I'm really not. Yeah. I think I just, you know, I think even just the coffee experience is, it's a little bit different. Because with our guests, like, we couldn't drink the same coffee. And so that, you know, but you want to be able to, like, taste this, all, like, be drinking the same thing. Right. So I'm excited for this. Yeah.
It did open up an opportunity to, like, reach out to people that are not in our area.
Absolutely.
So it was
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that we want to do with this. You know, we want this to, you know, to reach as many people as possible. And we hope that, that's happening. So... Well, how's everyone doing? Reggie, how are you doing, and how has quarantine been for you? I know some big things happened, so I don't, I'll just kind of let you
touch on that.
Oh, saving that part?
I have a question about that, actually.
Okay. We'll just in general, how's your time been?
Quarantine was pretty cool at first 2 weeks. I mean, don't have work. You're just chilling at home, watching movies, watching TV shows, doing what you like, laying back, right? But I do feel like it got a little... shaky after that, because it was a little bit more just, okay, I'm kind of tired. I'm finished my TV shows. I'm kind of tired of just staying in the house all day, and I'm ready to go back to work, but still had to stay in quarantine and stay isolated. And I mean, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it's not for everybody either.
For sure.
Just to be indoors all day.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's been going pretty well.
Been good. All right. So I want to ask one question for everyone. What is one show that you watched, and did you like it? Or, and you may have watched multiple. I'm assuming we probably all watched multiple shows. But what was one that you watched and you really liked?
One.
Yeah, just one show. You know, like a series. Yeah.
We had so much time to watch so many.
I know.
What was the one that stood out to you?
Well, okay. I'm not just going to say one.
Okay, that's totally fine. Bro, there are no rules here.
I started watching The Last Kingdom.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
I don't think I have.
Really good.
What's it on?
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
But it's about, like, the Saxon and the Danes, like, duking it out over land, you know, turf. So.
Duking it out.
Duking it out. So it's pretty cool. But I also watched Waco, which was.
That was a great
one. I'll talk about that
one.
Yeah.
That was a great one.
I'll let you talk about that, Landon.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, because you didn't do one, I'm not going to do one. So, my wife and I are huge foodies. I know we have some foodies at this table. We've talked about food on the podcast before. But my wife and I are kind of addicted to Top Chef. So, we've watched, I don't think it was in the time of quarantine. Matter of fact, I know it wasn't. We started before, but there are 16 seasons on Hulu. We have finished all 16 seasons, which is a bummer. There's like 15 or 16 episodes per season. But we are currently watching the current season weekly. But so I watched Waco. I think Caitlin maybe caught the last little bit of it. But yeah, Waco was really cool. One of my coworkers told me about it. You know, I really wasn't familiar with it at all. I don't know if any of you guys are. I won't really go into what it is. No spoilers.
Yeah.
But it was a really good, like, well put together show. So
yeah, it's based on a true story.
Yeah, historical, yeah. non Fiction?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, good show. What about you, Matt?
So I actually haven't been watching TV.
Oh, okay.
But to preface that, the reason why I haven't, because I'm sick of what's my only option of watching TV, is all the Harry Potters and Sonic.
Hey, I'm down with the Harry Potter.
Oh, and Frozen 2. Okay. Can't forget about what my daughter likes to watch. So yeah, that's been on repeat.
Okay.
Pretty much since quarantine started. Maybe even a little bit before that. This is one time I had a call with at work, because I'm working from home.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, he's like, "Is that Sonic in the background?" I'm like, "I'm so sorry."
But, wait, is that your son on the bed in his PJ in his underwear, just kind of dancing around?
Yeah,
there?
That was the Zoom's recording. But yeah. we don't do video conferences for work.
Yeah.
But I'm on phone calls all day, and it's so hard not to get the Sonic or the Frozen 2 in the background, because we don't have the luxury of like separate rooms, so we all sit in like a common area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have the TV going there, and then Shannon's listening to podcasts or a radio in another room, and then I'm working, and it's like three different things, and it's like, okay, I just need to like somehow control this stimulus of noise and just find some peace and quiet.
Hey, that's good. I mean, yeah, I think we all need that for sure.
But Sonic's pretty funny. It's like he has like one-liners that are really catchy,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I remember the movie.
Yeah. I think I heard you saying something about it.
Yeah, welcome to my live stream. That's the funniest part.
Well, I'm really excited to talk about this coffee. So I think this is where you come in, Matt.
Yeah, it's been a while, so we're a little rusty. But today's coffee is brought to you by Germex and Purell. we got a Brandywine coffee roaster. They're all over in Delaware. I believe this is the first time we're on the show. So you can get this coffee from them, but also you can pick it up at
So currently Upshot's. Right now, especially for our local listeners, Upshot Coffee, where I work, we're carrying this coffee right now. And then I know we've mentioned them a lot, but Comet Coffee in the city has them, and Road Crew will also feature Brandywine every now and then. So,
but
check their website. They've got a lot of great coffees.
Mm-hmm. So this one's the Delagua. It's a Colombia coffee out of the Nolele Vallejo Farms, right? Did I say that right?
Yeah. Dude.
we got to get Victoria back on here.
Yeah.
But the coffee, Landon was pretty excited about bringing this one on the show just because of like what they support. But on the coffee bag, you'll notice that it's a natural processed coffee. And for those of you who have listened to our episodes before, just kind of first time tuning in, the advantage of natural processed coffee is that there's less labor, less water. Basically, it says it in the name. It's just a natural processed coffee. Like, so basically what happens is after they remove the seed from the trees, they just lay it out on a bed and it's sun dried. You know, some farmers will wash it, which is like a wash process. Some will do like a honey process, but with the natural, it's like hands off. Mm-hmm. And the big push for natural process is that it saves water. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of countries out there that have little to no access to water, or even not just water, but like good quality water.
Yeah.
And that affects the coffee in general, from even from the seed to the time it's ready to brew, or it's ready to roast and brew. But yeah, and even on the logo, it says drink natural, save water.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty cool. But yeah. How do you guys feel? Let's go around the table. What do you guys think of this coffee?
So I have already finished my cup. I think this is kind of a trend. I just get a little too excited to wait. But so this coffee is, I think, tremendous. To be honest, Colombia sometimes are like hit or miss for me. Sorry, that's a whole conversation me and Matt have had.
Yeah.
But I think the reason why that is because Colombia is they put out so many different coffees. They're a very large coffee producing country. So you get a lot of variety, I will say, because you have different elevation levels and that kind of thing, a lot of varietals coffee wise. But this natural is just, to me, it's like fruit juice. It's kind of like syrupy. Not in like terms of body. This is a light roast, but it's just really sooty, syrupy, fruity. I was combining those two words. Sooty. you know, specifically, I mean, I don't know if I really can dive into like what exactly I'm tasting. I haven't thought about it. Sometimes when I'm like really enjoying a coffee, I just don't even think about like what I'm tasting. So that I like it a lot. What about you guys?
Well, first off, it smells really good.
Yeah.
That's what's important for you, Ryan.
My taste buds, I mean.
It's consumable.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yep.
So like,
it's got some fruitiness to it, and I like that.
So mm-hmm. If you would rank our coffees that we've had on the show, where would you rank it? Hmm. Top 5,
up there.
Top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Up there.
Okay.
I'm not going to pinpoint it.
That works. Reggie, what do you think? You're a dark guy, right?
I am. I really do like a dark coffee. It is a little lighter for my taste. I drink quite a bit of coffee, though, usually in the morning at work and stuff, but this is a little bit lighter than I'm used to. But I do like it a lot. It has some. I'm not really sure how to depict the taste.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the aftertaste of it.
Yeah.
After having it for a minute.
It hangs around. Yeah. Like it doesn't just go away. It coats your mouth.
Kind of. Like a good friend.
So when you drink coffee, you say you drink a lot of it. I'm assuming you drink coffee, like with your coffee. You make the coffee with your coffee maker, right? Like just a regular coffee maker.
Yes.
Have you ever had it with like a pour over method or like espresso? Like, do you drink coffee like that?
No, I've seen a lot of people that I know, including you guys, show some of these videos through social media, and it's always looked interesting. I've never got into it myself. Yeah. I've never really, I guess, tasted it myself, unless that's what this is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it tastes amazing.
Yeah. So was it a clear distinction between like a pour over and a coffee maker?
Yeah, it is. This is a lighter coffee too, so I'm not 100% sure on that, but it does taste different than what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good perspective.
For sure. Yeah. James, thumbs up, thumbs down? Big thumbs up. James said he liked it before.
Landon, so you said you've actually brewed this differently this time.
So, okay, I'm going to just put this out there. This is totally not, like, I did not come up with this at all. I was scrolling through Instagram one day, Sweet Bloom Coffee Roasters, we've had them on before. That was with Maxwell. I was looking on their Instagram, and I believe their owner, I can't remember his name, and I'll do a little shout out to them in the comments, but he just has this method called a bypass method, which is it's how he brews his coffee. So basically what that is, so I've talked about ratios a lot. I'm not going to try to go like crazy into this. Maybe I could put like something extra out about how I did this if people want to try it. But it's a 1-17 ratio, which is like kind of, that's what the word is, creates a lighter cup, right? You're getting more coffee or more water to the coffee. So my ratio was 19 grams of coffee. And then I'm brewing 19 grams of ground coffee, and then I pour 267 grams of water in. But I have 55 grams of water sitting in my carafe. So it's not my rinse water like that I rinse the filter with. Obviously, always discard that. But then I just add in 55 grams, and so that water never touches the ground coffee. So in a sense, you do brew like a little bit of more of like a concentrate. You grind just a little bit finer too, but, the coffee, I guess you guys can attest to it. Like it tastes good. So it's not like I've been brewing this way for probably 2 or 3 weeks now, and I've had so much consistency. So, I will maybe put something extra up this week about this recipe. And then I'll also give a little shout out to Sweet Bloom. You can go check out their page. And it's a little video that the owner posted, so you can probably find it easily. But yeah, I brewed it on the V60, and it's been turning out great every single time.
I have a question.
Do tell. Do ask.
Through me not being having a lot of knowledge about the pour over, what's the difference between pouring over and just a regular coffee maker?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and you can add to this, Matt, if you want to. But I mean, for me, when I think about that. So it's essentially the same thing, right? Water's being poured over coffee, it's extracting it, and then you get this liquid that's brown and whatever. It's coffee, right? But I think with pour over, you have control over more of the variables, right? So you can control the temperature of your water. Most, unless you buy a really expensive coffee maker, the temperature doesn't really get up that high. Like what you use, I think temperature sometimes gets up to 180 or 185 Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. But good, like, temperature for brewing coffee is 203, 205. I think that's like a sweet spot. So you can control that. You can control the exact amount of coffee that you use, right? Just with a scale, weighing that out. You can control just the amount of water that you add to the coffee. You can control how the water interacts with the coffee. Because like if you saw over there, I was using a gooseneck kettle. So you can really control the what you would call like agitation or turbulence, which is just how the water's kind of interacting with the coffee. So you can pour harder and add a little bit more turbulence. You can pour really softly. Little things like this, you would not think it, but it really does make a difference. So Matt, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I mean, I would just summarize that all to what you said. It's just more control of the process. You know, one of the things that you have to consider too is with automated coffee makers, there's a lot of room for error eventually. You know, maybe not the first couple, but you know, as time goes, you know, the like certain like harnesses inside the wires, they like maybe they get old, so it doesn't function as correctly all the time. The convenience of it is like it's just a push of a button and then you walk away, right? But then sometimes it doesn't pour correctly, like it'll pour uneven, sometimes it'll pour too fast, you know. And then like with coffee makers also, it takes a little longer to brew, and most people will tell you that longer brews will tend to get colder in the bottom. Now, I mean, when I say cold, I don't mean like lukewarm, but like it's a different temperature than what's on top of the coffee. Mm-hmm. And that'll affect your taste as well, because coffee will give you a different taste based on temperature as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those are just, I again, like there's nothing wrong with coffee makers. I think the luxury of it is to push in and continue to do what you're doing. You know, they're like Landon's saying, I have one, like there's options for like an automated pour over, which is a little bit more precise, but generally speaking, it's the same thing. It's just a matter of how much you want to pay attention to it or not.
Yeah. And I think another thing too, before we move on, is just like you can brew in smaller amounts too, right? So as you see, like I brewed like probably 8 or 9 ounces, you know, so it's not a lot. So I can, if I were to do that same amount in a coffee maker, like it would just kind of be all over the place. Like, you know, just brewing smaller amounts, like brewing one, maybe two cups, is very, very doable with a V60 setup, you know, pour over method. You know, when I use my coffee maker at home, I'm brewing like 3 or 4 cups usually. Yeah. So,
and I would say too, you know, one of the things that I find very common is that not bad mouth, but a lot of people have this like bad perception of coffee makers. And I do want to say that it's not usually the coffee maker that's the problem. It's usually the quality of the coffee that's the problem, you know?
Yeah.
Coffee makers can be really, really good if you invest just a little bit more on the quality of coffee. And we've touched on this before, like, you know, looking at the roast date, the quality and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the big difference
there. Yeah, but that's a great question. And I mean, if you have any others throughout this episode, dude, we would love to answer them. Because a lot of times what you're thinking, someone coming into this that is maybe a little bit more of a casual coffee drinker, that's probably what our listener may be thinking about too. So, for sure. But why don't you, just for our listeners, just kind of give us like a brief, kind of like who you are. What do you do? Where are you from? Stuff like that.
Man, well, I'm from St. Louis. I was kind of born and raised between St. Louis and like St. Charles County area the majority of my life. I'm a huge sports fan. I love art. I love a lot of different types of things. I'm very versatile with a lot of different things I like to do. I love business and marketing and a bunch of different things like that, and that's kind of what I've kind of went down my path with life, kind of being into and kind of looking into and stuff like that. Huge music guy too, very versatile with that. I can listen to anything between, I was listening to some really heavy metal screamo music on the way over here. But then right before that, I was listening to 90s R&B, which is my favorite genre. And that's cool. But that's kind of a lot of what pertains to me and what I really kind of involve myself in a lot of times. And I am very heavily involved too in my faith and my relationship mm-hmm. with God. And I'm actually living over in Collinsville while serving in a church over there, which mm-hmm. is pretty awesome too, and serving in the campus ministry over there, which has been awesome for the past couple of years or so.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So you're actually our first Collinsville guest speaker.
Awesome.
On here. We've had everybody on every church plant from mm-hmm. the Crossings on the show officially today because of you.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So Wentzville and then Interbelt and then future church plant Columbia that's getting sent out in December. So now Collinsville. Yeah. We were all thinking, and man, I think you were like one of the first people that came to mind. Just a great guy and a servant and someone that's like always wanted to use their story, you know, for good and to glorify God. But you know, you said you're obviously heavily involved with your faith, and you know, I'm curious, growing up, was God or faith or anything like that like ever a part of the picture? And I guess just kind of overall, like maybe like paint a little bit of a picture for us, like what it was like, you know, just some of your earliest memories.
Man, that's a tough one. That's not a one I always really like to mm-hmm. remember on. But I do think it's always good to remember where I came from at the same time. So, yeah, I mean, some of my earliest memories that I ever remember, period, little bit sadder than a lot of people's. But one of my first, two of my first memories, my first memory that I've ever had that I remember, I believe I was around 4 years old, and I remember looking over the back of the couch in my living room, and I saw my parents, like, in a physical altercation, like just hitting one another and stuff like that in the kitchen. And it was, I didn't really know what was going on at the time. I believe my dad was drunk at the time too. And it was just kind of like, okay, what's going on? And then I have a couple other memories around that same time. And we didn't live in the greatest area at the time either. And
if you don't mind me asking, what area is that?
The area that I lived in was, there was two different neighborhoods that I lived in. The memories that I'm talking about right now, it was in a neighborhood called Hidden Valley in Wentzville, Missouri. And then another one of these memories, of these three memories that I'm talking about, happened in the Heights in Wentzville, Missouri also.
Okay.
They're kind of like two neighborhoods that were just kind of a little bit more run down and just... Not as privileged as the rest of the city that city was in, mm-hmm. and
yeah.
not the city didn't really give a lot of thought to that area. Mm-hmm. But some of those memories, like I was talking about, was my parents like physically fighting one another and stuff like that. And I remember another one when I was like 4 years old in Hidden Valley, and it was, for some reason, I was looking out the window, and I remember seeing a pizza man getting robbed for some reason. And I'm not really sure why that reason was, mm-hmm. But I remember somebody throwing a rock in his windshield and then stealing like his pizza and his money. It was really odd to me because I didn't really know what was going on. And I remember just like being thrown over my dad's shoulder and just leaving. And I had to leave my favorite truck at whatever place we were at because I think we were getting either evicted or we were moving for some odd reason. I think my dad got in trouble somewhat and we couldn't live in the place that we were living anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many memories like that, really growing up. And I mean, it was like that for a while, for the majority of my elementary and junior high, and even some of high school career, really. Yeah. Because just the environment that we kind of lived in was never the greatest. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we were house to house. And then when I was around 7 years old, our house actually caught on fire during a winter storm, and we were out, and then we came back and the house was just on fire and stuff like that. So that kind of put us in a little predicament too. And, just kind of like going from place to place a lot of time at times, going place to place and moving to a new house. And we were never really set in one place the entire time. And it was kind of hard sometimes too, just growing up in that environment, because I went to a predominantly like, wealthier, school district. And we didn't really have a lot of money. We didn't really have those type that the things that would necessarily make you feel like you're wanted, if that makes sense. Yeah. A lot of people in life really want the finer things in life. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The Nike, the Adidas, those type of things. And we couldn't afford those things, and we couldn't have those things. So trying to go to school, I felt like I was very, very insecure with just who I was, and not trusting that I was really able to accomplish anything, because there were so many things around me growing up during that time, that from elementary school to junior high, that I just didn't feel like I deserved to get anything, or I was able to get anything because of what I didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like growing up in that environment didn't really help me. And my parents weren't really there for me emotionally, or just with school, or just even with much support at all. I mean, I played sports. I played a couple of sports when I was younger, which were really fun and stuff like that. And I did a little bit of that in junior high too, but I never really still felt like I was worth something.
Yeah.
And I've even stepped back from playing sports at times because I didn't want to, because I was too scared to, or I was too scared to compete, or I was too scared to do anything.
Right.
And I think a lot of that did come from not feeling really worth anything growing up, and feeling less than because of the way that at times my parents would treat me, as if like just belittling me and making sure that I knew that I was less than, if that makes sense, through the way that they would talk and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm listening to your story, and it's kind of bringing me back to two other people we've had on the show, with Juan Black and Brian Owens, and there's kind of like this similarity in stories and in upbringing, you know. But when you hear like the word becoming a product of your environment, like how does that make you feel, or like what do you think about that?
I feel like before I gained a relationship with God, that was my life. Mm-hmm. That's something that I feel like I look back at my life and I was a product of my environment. I really was. That's what I felt like I. And I tell people about this a lot, like I felt like I was destined to, and the only way to make it out, and it's not really making it out of that environment, but it's just creating more of that environment for people who are younger than me, was by either selling drugs or by, there was three inevitable things that were going to happen to me in my eyes growing up. Because in my household, there was nothing but dysfunction and a lot of like hate and just a lot of like mental abuse, physical abuse, and so many different things like that happened. And there was only three inevitable things that I felt like were going to happen in my life, or that I felt like I would have worth. And it was either selling drugs or by selling drugs, I was either going to be dead by 18, which a lot of my friends, some of my friends were, or I'm going to be in jail. And those were the three things. I'm either going to sell drugs, or I'm going to work at some dead end job for the rest of my life, or I'm going to be dead before I'm 18, or maybe even sooner than that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are like the things that I felt like I was a product of my environment, because that's all my dad saw, and that's all he was at a time. And same thing with my mom, and same thing with all my friends. And believe it or not, in my neighborhood, from my knowledge, we were the more wealthy and the more put together, quote unquote, family in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So compared to what everything was around me, you couldn't see the hope. So you had to be a product of your environment.
And that's interesting too, because, you know, I mean, I used to say to my mom all the time, you know, when I was struggling, and I'd say like, man, like no other family has to go through this, you know? And my mom would be like, every family has their issues, right? And kind of like what you were saying, like, you know, you never ever know what is going on behind closed doors, you know? Mm-hmm. And that sometimes that's like a scary prospect. But, you know, as you're talking about kind of being a product of your environment, I think, because you said that that was all that your dad saw, and, you know, thinking about cycles. And I think that's like the really cool thing about, you know, about the Crossings Church and about a lot of other churches that we're connected to, and a lot of other brothers and sisters that we know, is, you know, they're made up of so many people that are breaking cycles. And that's a really amazing thing. And so, like you said, it was what your dad saw. It's who your dad was. And you saw yourself becoming that. And so growing up, did you ever have the thoughts of like, what's it going to take for things to change? Like, what would have to happen to me right now in order for me to not be like the people that I'm seeing? Like, did you ever have those thoughts?
Oh man, you're bringing back more memories. Yeah, I mean, I've had everybody, when you're in that situation, I feel like every, or in that type of environment, I feel like everybody has some type of slither of hope at one point or another. And I feel like I've had that at times, but I had nowhere to look to be able to gain that at the same time, because I can hope that things can change all day long. But when you're constantly, whether secretly like crying yourself to sleep sometimes because you don't understand why your parents are fighting, or why your parents are treating you this way or that way, or why you were born into this family or that family, I feel like it's hard to see hope within that when that's a daily thing, and you don't and you don't see anything out, even outside of your household and your other friends' lives, that are changing any way either. And I feel like I tried to look for that, but I feel like I gave up on it too at one point or another. And I feel like another way out was possibly through suicide. And I mean, I know there's been people close to me who have passed away from that. There's been times that I've attempted that. And it's like, those are like the ways out. Those are the ways to where it's either that way or you go down the other path.
Yeah.
But it was hard to see hope after you're in that same cycle and that same environment every year, going on and on and on. It's hard to find or see hope in those situations.
Right. What was the... So another memory for you, maybe, if you can remember, but I'm sure you can. But like, what was that first memory, or the instance of like where you saw hope, where you're like, okay, maybe things could be different.
Maybe things could be different. I think it was when I first started coming around to the Crossings Church, when I started going through the junior high ministry. I think the first time I really saw that there might be hope was when I heard some of the campus ministry kids at the time, stories, and how they were teaching me certain things, and they were just talking about what they've been through, and it kind of hit me for a minute. And then like hearing a lot about specifically Chris Adair, who was a junior high leader in the church, in the Crossings Church, at the time, hearing kind of his story and hearing what he's went through and kind of who he was. And by looking at that person, I never thought for a second that that's what they've done or how they grew up. But when I heard their stories and then saw where their lives were, it kind of was like, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. And I think that was like that aha moment to me.
Yeah. Why don't you bring us back a little bit? Like, what was that first interaction like when you ran into the youth ministry?
Man, I think that first interaction,
what was going on? Like, how did that happen? Do you remember?
I think, it's more broad in my memory than just like one specific moment. I think it was over a course of years that Tim and Mallory Smith, who were also junior high leaders at the time, and Chris and Fran Adair, who kind of like, I started going to their cross chats on Wednesday nights, I think it was at that time. And kind of seeing the environment that was there with other kids, and then the adults willing to open up their houses and willing to love and care for you and just really show you love, and not just at the time. And one of the things that really gave me hope a lot was something that Chris Adair said to me one time. And I felt like it was a really minimal thing, but at the same time, it hit me so hard for some reason. And I remember him telling me one time that no matter what, and every time I'd leave his house, he's like, no matter what happens at home, no matter if it's at 2 a.m., or if it's at 4 a.m., whether it's at midnight, or whether it's in the middle of the afternoon, if anything's ever going wrong, or if anything is happening, and you don't feel comfortable, or you don't feel like you want to be there at that time, give me a call, and I will come and pick you up, no matter what. And I felt that gave me a lot of hope right there, kind of coming into the junior high ministry, because I felt like I had somebody who was going to support me and love me despite what's going on around me. So I feel like kind of transitioning into that junior high ministry, it really helped out a lot to have those people kind of sacrifice a lot of time, money, energy, and everything they had just to give me, just to even, and it wasn't even like they were preaching at me. It was just that they were trying to love me and really trying to give me something that was not what I had back home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And a lot of it was because they've been through similar things.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So yeah. Do you feel like, you received a lot of sacrifice from your parents back home? Like, did they sacrifice a lot for you? Or is it through, you know, Chris and Fran's sacrifice that you kind of felt more love? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think all of our parents have sacrificed something for us in our lives. I feel like my parents have sacrificed for us, but I do feel like there was something that Chris and Fran and Tim and Mallory, it was something that they had necessarily that kind of gave me some type of support that I feel like my parents either weren't able to or didn't want to give me.
Yeah,
and I think it was something more inwardly than outwardly. And I'm not talking about something that like putting a shelter over my head or putting food in my mouth. It was something bigger than that. I didn't know what that thing was at that time, but I knew it wasn't just something physical given somebody, because I feel like people need things to sacrifice. Clearly, we all have troubled times and stuff like that, and people need to give us something sometimes and love us. But at the same time, I feel like there's something that was, at that time, it was just something different that I didn't know what it was, but I knew I needed it.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, like some of my earliest, like favorite kind of memories of, you know, just learning about who God was or who God is from the scriptures. Like, I before that, it was being shown that the love, right? Mm-hmm. For what you're talking about. And I think I'm someone, to be honest, I've talked about it on here before, but like, you know, there are just a lot of times where I seriously just doubt God's love for me. It's not that I don't believe it for myself. I think I believe it about other people, but maybe not for me. And there's a lot that kind of goes into that. But, you know, a good friend would always tell me, he'd be like, man, just think about the people that you have in your life. Think about the way that they love you. Do you understand that that is a direct, like God is loving you through them? And like, God is even more perfect, more holy, more amazing. So if you're being loved this way, you know, and when I say love, I'm talking about not only just the hugs and the meals and all those kinds of things, but I'm talking also about the challenge, the correction, all those things that need to be there. But it's just so good to be reminded of God's love through people. Because if you didn't have that, I mean, you can read a book and get a lot of things from it, and you can read a book like the Bible and just not quite have a kind of a different picture of maybe who God is. But even God in the scripture says directly, like, listen, you know, you need to love people, and you're going to know who I am by the love of each other. Yeah. And so I just think that's cool, and I think that that was what you were experiencing. And so for me, it was really cool when I finally made that connection. It's like, you mean this guy over here that just did that for me? You mean like that? That's what God's like? Because I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love that.
Where do you think that comes from? Because you said you had a hard time accepting God's love, but you accept the love from others.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of days ago, someone told me that they have no doubt God loves them, but they have a hard time accepting love.
Wow. That's...
I mean, that can go
That's
through.
The meat and potatoes of this podcast. I think
that can go through a lot of times, like with people. Like for me, like I know I have a lot of trust issues with people because of the way that I grew up and stuff like that. So I feel like with a lot of people who have had years, like let's say this person is 20 years old and they've had 20 years of experience of not being able to trust people from when they were a kid until now, to turn around and try to trust somebody and give somebody your heart and give them a vulnerable side of you is, I think, is more gonna take time than anything.
Yeah. And I was gonna say, like, I think for me, I kind of share a similar story. Like, you know, I don't doubt that my parents, like, they loved me. Like, and despite all the fighting we had, the bickering, whatever, you know, that's a whole nother episode. But the difference for me was that when I first met some of the people who reached out to me, as far as like in the church goes, I think what it came down to was like the unconditional love. Mm-hmm. You know, very mm-hmm. similar to what God provides for us and talks about in the Bible. But like just the idea, like, you know, my first interaction was with this couple, Ashley and RJ. You know, and we can go around the table and we all know who they are. Mm-hmm. At the time they were, or they still are, youth ministers, but I was in the campus ministry at the time. So there wasn't really like a direct like contact as far as like they were my youth ministers or whatever, but they were just my friends, mm-hmm. right? I met them on campus. And what stuck out to me was that, like, I'm a college kid and we all know what college is like. We literally have nothing to offer, like not even like financially, or like sometimes not even like with our time because we're busy studying and whatnot. But Ashley and RJ, like, they invited me to their house like constantly, like not even like just like once in a while, but like constantly. And if you all know RJ, like they just invited me over for some adobo, like rice and meat and like soy sauce. But like, you know, if for me, like growing up, a lot of that was like, okay, I invited you to my house. Like what can you do for me? Can mm-hmm. you clean my house? Or like, yeah. you know, like, or like you can't come over empty handed, like, you know, stuff like that. But with Ashley and RJ, it was like, yeah, just come over hungry. And I'm like, what? Like, you sure you don't want me to pick up anything on the way? Like what is it? And, you know, and it wasn't like, I mean, I can go down the list of like examples of unconditional love, but that's what it was for me. It was just mm-hmm. that, you know, I can see the unconditional love for each other. You know, like people just genuinely want to do nice things, not just because it's a nice thing to do, but like, because that's what God calls them to do. And that's what they've become because of like their relationship with God. And that's just what stood out to me as mm-hmm. far as like love goes. And like, what I saw was different, was just yeah. the unconditional part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, what you asked a few minutes mm-hmm. ago, that's a good question, and I'm honestly not sure. I think actually what I said, though, and I think it is maybe similar, is I believe the love that God has for others. But because I think what you maybe heard me say was, I believe that others love me. Does that make sense? So... Yeah. So I think what you heard was, I believe that others love me, but I'm not so sure about God sometimes.
Sure.
But when I think about it, I'm like, you know, when I look at, you know, the people around me, and I'm like constantly trying to dream for them and encourage them, and I don't know if any of you guys have like had this moment, but you're encouraging them and you believe it literally with everything that you've got. And I'm sure, Reggie, just thinking about your background and where you came from, I know that you had people like Chris and Fran, Tim and Mal, Ashley and RJ. You know them very well, and maybe you could speak about them later. But like, I'm sure that they were dreaming for you all the time. And sometimes when you're dreaming for someone else, you believe it with like all of your might. But then when you take a step back, this was for me, I take a step back, it's like, not so sure about me. But definitely for them.
Right.
Where that comes from, you know, not really sure. But
you're just so humble.
No, to be honest, I think it's I think there are some relationships that were not quite there growing up, and maybe I'll go into that in some later episodes, but yeah. Anyway. But, you know, you have this introduction into the youth ministry and you're starting to see the love of people, something that you hadn't seen at home. I guess, like, kind of where did things go from there? Like, the time that you spent with them, maybe a personal application, like maybe reading your Bible and be like, you know what, I want to know who this God is. Like, I mean, I guess, like, how did things kind of take shape after that?
I mean... From the introduction going forward, I mean, I felt like it was just constantly a lot of just hanging out, constantly a lot of just kind of like building a relationship with like Tim and Mal and Chris and Fran over those 3 years or so. It was just really building a relationship with me. And there's many nights and weekends that I would stay the night at their house and just hang out, play video games, and kind of I got, in a sense, build a trust with them too. And I feel like after, and even a little bit after that, I feel like it got to, like, it was at, like in stages. Like, I built a friendship with them, so I felt a little bit more comfortable to be able to talk with them about whatever was going on at home or whatever was going on in my mind or what was going on at school, and all those different types of things. So I feel like it just kept going like that. And then it ended up, they ended up asking me to study the Bible, and I kind of started doing that. And I was in and out of it at first, and I was like, I started, did a few, and then stopped. And also at the time, I was in junior high, so I wasn't really like all the way in.
Your mind, you know what I'm saying? Was other places.
Yeah. I mean, I was going through puberty. I was doing everything. I was worried about other things besides
what
the Bible
like
all the time.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, and that, I mean, I think that was an issue at that time too. I think I was a lot. Like building these relationships here, but then I felt like I was really maintaining a lot of things on the side too, mm-hmm. and getting involved a lot of things yeah. that at that age I shouldn't even been introduced to. But at the same time, that's the environment I grew up in. I shouldn't have been in a lot of places I was, and I was, but I feel like I was like half in, half out at a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I feel like after building that relationship for so long, and seeing kind of like what a relationship with God looks like, and then really seeing that on one end, and then going over here and going back home and acting out and doing whatever and going to these parties and stuff like that with these friends, it was, I could see the difference.
Yeah.
And some of the older kids, I could see their lives going in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, that's my dad. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could see what's going this way, and I could see what's going this way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got the college kids on this side in the church that I see their lives and see where they've went and where they're going. And then on this side, I could see where my friends are the ones a little bit older than me and see where their lives are leading
to. And that probably wasn't a lot different from what you saw at home. It's like, man, I've got this family that, man, I want to go on a different path. And then now I've got these friends, and it's kind of the same. So, yeah, definitely a stark contrast there. And I remember with John Magnuson, you know, he talked a lot about kind of one foot in, one foot out.
Yeah.
And I think that's a common thing. And then, you know, the other thing that you said about kind of your friend group, I remember Christian talking a lot about in terms of like kind of – counting the costs, in a sense, mm-hmm. like, you know, which is going to, and you probably aren't thinking about it in this way early on, but you're like, which is going to bless me more, the parties or the late night chats that are centered around love? I don't know. And so kind of thinking about those things.
Yeah. And this is a typical question I ask a lot is like, was there like a tipping of the scale of, like, was there an interaction that kind of tipped the scale of like, okay, like, I need to have a better relationship with God, or I need to pursue this more? Or was it just a general like heart change?
I think at that age, it wasn't like a complete like heart change, but I do feel like there was a little bit of a tipping to the scale. And I don't think it was like one specific moment. I think it was a little bit over time during that time. And I've even noticed it upon the years too.
Mm-hmm.
Even till this day, I still see things from people in the past, and it's still like showing me that tipping scale is like, yeah. But I feel like when you say that tipping scale during that time, I feel like the tipping scale was, I was at someone else's baptism actually. And it was around the same, it was the same day that I actually surrendered my life to God. And I was at somebody else's baptism, and I'm not sure what happened, to be honest. I'll explain what happened. So this person just got baptized, and then we did like, we do the circle and sing and give some advice and stuff like that. And then for some reason, I barely remember it a little bit, but I remember it. I remember we were at a church that's in Ofala, Missouri, and I remember for some reason just started crying. I don't know mm-hmm. why. And then I remember sitting in this pew and like bawling. And I've only bawled like that probably 5 times in my life. I'm not a super vulnerable person, but I remember just bawling. I don't know what was coming over me. And then I remember just, and I was studying the Bible at this time too. So I remember Chris and Tim were just talking to me, and Tim was talking to me and stuff like that, and trying to figure out what was going on. And I was like, I don't know. And then we were close to the end of the Bible studies at that time too. And we've talked about like what it is to be a disciple, what it is to surrender your life to God and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was kind of the tipping point. And I tell everybody the same thing when I talk about that story. Something was going through my head at that time when I was sitting there bawling and crying. And it was literally those two options there sitting on the table. It was that option of, okay, I've seen this relationship with God thing for the past 3 years or so. And I've watched it. I've watched it from a junior high perspective. I've seen it from a youth leader's perspective. I've seen their story and seen where it's been. I've had interactions and I've had people like, I mean, there's plenty of people, whether it was Eliza or whether it was Sean Gallagher or Nicole or Jeremy. There are so many people throughout, and those are all those people were in the campus ministry at the time, and hearing their stories and seeing their lives change. I saw that on one plate, and I was like, I could go to this, and I'm having the opportunity to do so right now. But then I look on the other plate, I'm like, or I can go here. And I can continue to do the same things that I'm doing and having that instant gratification, whether it was sleeping around at that time or whether it was going to those parties or whether it was just letting my own insecurities control me and make me act out in a way, whether I was at school or wherever I was at, and constantly getting in trouble and getting kicked out of the school at the same time for fighting. And clearly there's a bunch of built up anger there. And I saw that, and I saw where that would lead to the older kids in my neighborhood and the older kids who were doing what they were doing and what they were getting into, whether it was drugs or whether it was just gangs and other things like that. And I remembered thoughts of like, man, I just saw this house. When I got off the bus, I saw this house just get kicked in by a SWAT team two doors down from me. And it's like, I just saw my friend get arrested the other day. And then I'm like, okay, I see that there. And then I see my parents and kind of how they grew up and St. Louis and just all the stuff that my dad and my parents got into. And I saw those two plates right there, the one from a relationship with God and the one from my neighborhood and the environment that I grew up in. I said, these are my two options. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that day, I feel like God was really speaking to me that day and really gave me that breakdown of, these are your two options.
Yeah.
I'm not going to force you to do what you want, but this is your two options. And mm-hmm. I ended up surrendering my life to God that day mm-hmm. and been going ever since. But I feel like that was that kind of tipping scale that really hit me the hardest.
Yeah, and I think that if you go around the table, I think at one point in our life, we've kind of had that same interaction of like, all right, now we got to choose, you know, we can choose the life, our old life, or we can choose this new life or this renewing of our life, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, for some people, it comes in different shapes and forms, you know, like some are more dramatic than others, you know, and I would say like mine would, I mean, maybe not be so dramatic, but at one point you're just like, okay, this is it. And we've had several people on the show kind of share like what tipped the scale for them. And I'm just in awe of like that interaction, especially looking at your life, Reggie. Like I wasn't part of your life. I wasn't around whenever you made that decision, but I look at like just like the product of your current environment of being like a disciple, a Christian in the church, active, and like all the people that followed you out of New Heights. And it's just such a cool, I mean, we'll probably get there, but just thinking of that, it's just such a cool story of like, okay, we tipped the scale and like, look how God blessed this tremendously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have we talked about New Heights on the show before? Mm-mm. Might be a good time. So Reggie, like, kind of where you come from, and then I don't know, because I'm not even so sure what the timeline on this was, but can you like speak on New Heights a little bit, maybe your involvement with it, and like, I don't know, I guess the impact that that's had on your life and maybe on some others?
Yeah. So New Heights was, from my knowledge, a kind of like an after-school tutoring program that was set up by Chandler and Lord Atkins, who kind of run that for the Crossings Church. And it was, and I can't remember what year they really started. I think it was like 2004 or something mm-hmm. like that. But I was living in that neighborhood at the time. And Chandler and Lord lived in that neighborhood also. I remember seeing their house all the time. And I remember it was one of my friends, actually, who's lived on the same street as me, one of my best friends growing up. He actually started going to this. And I remember him getting on this big blue and white bus every week on Wednesday nights. And I didn't really know what it was or anything like that, but he kept telling me, oh, you should go, you should go. So
in perspective, it's like it's like this bus, this school bus looking thing going through like this rundown neighborhood, picking up random kids.
literally picking up like random kids. And my mom would never let me go because she was like, yeah, I'm not going to let you get on some random bus, right? And I was upset because I was like, oh, all my friends are going and stuff, so I want to go too. And actually, and my older sister somehow, I can't remember how she necessarily started going to, I don't know if it was New High she started going to or the junior high minute she started going to, but she somehow got connected. And then my parents were more willing to, because she was a little bit older than us, so she had a little bit more leeway with going to things. So we ended up started going, and remember one of my favorite places the Crossing Church has ever had was what was like this little warehouse that they used to do church service in, over in Wentzville off Highway A. And it was just this little place, and it was just like you walk in and there's like a little coffee shop, a little bookstore just right next to the right when you walk in, and then you walk 2-3 feet further and you get two classrooms to the right and the left, small classrooms for the kids, and then you walk 2 more feet and you got the auditorium, so-called. Mm-hmm. But it was my favorite place. I remember doing so many different youth ministry events and stuff there. But we also had New Heights there on those Wednesday nights. And it really consists of just like giving the kids that were there, that were able to come, an opportunity just to sit down and kind of help the college. A lot of the college kids were there from the campus ministry at the time. And they always just kind of volunteered for free to just be able to sit down and help us with our homework and help us with those things. Because I know I didn't really get a lot of help from homework and stuff like that from my parents at home. And I know a lot of my friends didn't either. So getting that help was always really nice and stuff like that. And they'd always feed us and give us a hot meal to eat and stuff like that for dinner. And I know for some of my friends, that was possibly the only meal they were going to eat that day if they didn't eat at school. So I thought that was always really cool, that kind of what they did and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, we didn't really deserve a lot of this stuff, the way that a lot of us acted and treated some of these volunteers and even Laura and Chandler. I don't know how they do it, to be honest. But
well, I mean, really, Laura and Chandler are incredible. Mm-hmm. And I got to serve in New Heights for a year or two, you know, when I, after I became a disciple, and it was one of the coolest experiences, and I look back on it very fondly. But, you know, I think Laura and Chandler, like, they have, and I know, looking back on it, if you think about it, though, I'm sure that you understand why, but, you know, they have so much grace with these kids because... and a lot of those same kids come to church on Sundays through that same New Heights bus, and then they are in our classrooms. And, you know, my wife and I have gotten to teach those kids. And, you know, obviously you have to be strict and try give a lot of correction and a lot of guidance, but you know what they are going through. You know what they don't have that other kids have. And you know this. I mean, my background in school is, or my degree is education. So I see this in public classrooms too, but, you know, you understand like, man, you know, this student might have had a sleepless night last night because they were so hungry, or a sleepless night because their parents were fighting all night. And so if they act out, doesn't mean I'm not going to correct them or to apply some discipline, but I am absolutely going to like be more understanding and have grace with them, you know?
And that's one of the coolest things too about it was like you said, like I didn't understand how they could just handle it and with the patience and everything.
Yeah.
But I understand, like you were saying, why they were doing it. Probably not at the time, but I understand now why they were doing it and just how much love and kind of compassion and care they had for these kids. And just they had a real like a zeal to really want to see them become something great. Mm-hmm. When a lot of the world or the city that we even live in didn't really blink an eye at it.
Right.
So I understand that, and I think that's super awesome to see and super awesome that I was a product of that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Chandler and Laura.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a relationship with God or have anything in my life that I have right now.
Yeah.
It's a possibility I might not be alive if it was for Lana, Chandler and Laura.
Chora. Yeah.
But yeah, that's one thing they really did too, was like they not only did that, they didn't just help us with our homework and give us food, but they were also, they always also sat down with us and like showed us what the Bible had to say about God, mm-hmm. and what the Bible had to say and what God wanted for each one of us.
Right.
And that was something that was the more, was a little bit different than what I really was used to at that time. Because usually, it was more of like, oh, fun time, get out the house and don't have to be around our parents type thing. But then I think the older we got throughout elementary school and stuff like that, it kind of started getting a little bit more serious and starting to understand a little bit more and asking more questions and stuff like that.
Right.
But I think it's an amazing program, and they did so many different things for us. I remember like many times like Chandler and some of the other volunteers would either like just take us out to, whether it's just take us out to eat or just do anything with us really outside of just that Wednesday night, mm-hmm. whenever they had the chance. Sometimes it was like a baseball game or something like that, or and they even do like this thing called it was like this Christmas store or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. they would take us on retreats. They would do this Christmas store every year, and if you were good throughout the year, they'd give you a certain amount of fake dollars or whatever it's called. I don't really know what it's called. And then at the end of the year, around December, around Christmas, a lot of us didn't really have money or anything like that. So they set up this Christmas store when all the bunch of people from the church gave a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. And we got to go throughout that store and use the little dollars we had and stuff like that to be able to buy things for, whether it was our family members, our sisters, our brothers and stuff like that. Cool. So that was really cool.
Teaching you those yeah. social skills. And that's really cool.
They took
cool.
us on retreats and like just campgrounds and stuff like that.
Thanksgiving dinners and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
It was super awesome. Cool to see, because I just can't get over the fact on how much patience they had. It's just amazing yeah. to me. Because yeah. I'm thinking back just about me personally, and I'm like, I don't understand.
You feel like you like, were... You feel like just your behavior alone was worth like 10 kids.
Yeah, and I'm like, so what about everybody else? Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a recruiting pitch, because we need more people for people like, yep. like you.
Yep. I mean, that's another thing right there, was that like it wasn't just like Lauren Chandler either.
Yeah.
Some of my biggest memories from New Heights was from the majority of the volunteers that were there and what they did with us outside of just the standard meeting or tutoring program on Wednesday yeah. nights. And them hanging out with us. I remember, and I remember some of the campus guys taking me when I was in junior high to some of the guys' houses at Lindenwood.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
just to hang out.
You, I think, against? Matt, I think you were there at that time. I feel like I remember seeing you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been to the one.
I was like, I don't know, why am I here? Cool. But yeah. It was so cool. It was cool to see and cool yeah. to kind of build that friendship.
Yeah.
Because I still have really good friendships with those people to this day.
Absolutely. Yeah. So kind of moving forward a little bit, you know, you surrender to Christ, you're serving in New Heights, you know, after having been served, and you're serving, and so you're here in Wentzville for mm-hmm. several years, and then 2017, is that when Collinsville? Yep. So you decided to, you know, like Matt here, you know, in 2014, you guys decided to move to the inner city, be a part of a church plant there, and we've had a couple of people on from that, you know, Maxwell and name just Maddie. Jeez, I wanted to say Melanie for some reason. Maddie. But yeah, and then 2017, you know, you decided that you wanted to go out there and to serve in Collinsville. So I guess just kind of like, I guess briefly, what have the last, you know, 3 years been like-ish out there in Collinsville?
Man, it's been busy, I can yeah. tell you that.
Church plant joke is no joke.
But it has been good. It's been really good. It's been really good, I think, for many areas of my life and my relationship with God, just because it wasn't the easiest thing to move at first. But I feel like over the past 3 years, I've grown so much, whether it's with my confidence, my courage, my just actually a lot of just trusting in God and having a lot of trust in people too. Because mm-hmm. I was talking about earlier about how that was one of my biggest issues, is mm-hmm. trusting people and giving people that opportunity in my life. Yeah. And I feel like it really stretched my faith a lot throughout those 3 years through many different things. But I do feel like it's been the biggest blessing that I've had in my relationship with God, was moving over there and really being challenged to grow in my faith. And I feel like at a point or one another, it was either you grow or you go. Does that make sense? Like that's just how it felt at one point or another. But it has been really cool over the past couple of years. I mean, I've had my relationship problems and stuff like that. And I was with someone and then we broke up, and then a month later we got back together and then we broke up. And then we went on the church plant with one another. And
but not together.
Not together. We were broken up at the time.
Yeah.
But we still saw each other 5 days a week. So and there was a lot of shade and a lot of just...
a lot of shade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was interesting too. But it was cool because we did end up getting back together while we were on the church plant and serving in the same ministry. And then...
Broke up again. Just kidding.
Yeah. But yeah, we were able to, me and Ayana, my wife,
ooh,
love you.
Wait, wife?
Like that.
What happened?
Yeah. Well, we got back together once we were on the church plant, 6 months after we got on the church plant, and then we just started kind of slowly dating again and stuff like that. I mean, we were very immature in our first two relationships with one another. And so we started growing with one another in the campus ministry over there and really just learning and really being more patient and loving with one another and kind of making sure that God was in the center of everything, because mm-hmm. that was a big issue beforehand, was God wasn't the center of our decision-making, the center of everything that we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing, is a reason why we ended up breaking up, and then we ended up getting back together, and that was one of our main goals. Our mm-hmm. only goal, really, was to put yeah. God in the center and let life work out the way it is. So everything was going great and stuff like that, and we really do love each other and stuff like that, and we ended up getting engaged and then getting married while we were on the church plant, actually, which has been awesome.
Actually, now that you mentioned it, I kind of wanted to touch on that, because it's not like you've been married. You literally just got married.
Yeah.
So you were actually, so to preface, you got married like the first week this whole coronavirus stuff came down.
Yep.
Yep.
So how was that? Like, how was that week for you?
It was very odd, because I'm a very solution-based person, so I didn't really put a lot of emotion to it. I just saw something that needed to change, so I was boom, 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 right?
Yeah.
But I feel like it was just such a busy year so far this year, because we got married this year.
Yeah.
And we had...
like 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Or maybe a little...
Yeah, 5 weeks. Yeah,
five, six weeks ago.
But it's been a busy year so far already, because we had like retreats and stuff we were doing earlier this year in January. Then we turn around and we have like all of February, the stuff we were doing in February, and then March hits, and then we have a spring break trip we do annually with our campus ministry. And that was on, I can't remember what dates that were, but that was 1 week in March. And then the next week we had to plan the rest of our wedding. Then we were getting married that Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back from Tennessee in the mountains, and the world went crazy.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh man, what are we going to do? And there's stuff about the COVID-19, and they're like, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to be for a year. This is going to be for 6 months, whatever. Right. We don't know what's going on. So we were like, well, we want to get married. We can't like push this back and stuff like that. So we literally planned a wedding in one night, literally. We wow. switched everything. Thank you, Ashley and RJ Catazon. They helped out a lot with everything. And we just rushed to get everything done. And it was still really cool. We pushed it right before they made the 10-person rule, and we got 50 people in there.
Nice.
We actually had it at the Crossings Church, Wentzville, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was different. It wasn't really what we... dream for what we had planned out,
mm-hmm.
but I do feel like there was a lot of people were there that we really did love and really wanted to support us, and they came out, and within a day or two of us telling them what was happening, they were all so willing just to jump in.
Yeah.
One of my groomsmen right here, Ryan, we're all willing just to jump in and do anything possible to be able to help us and get that day planned for us, and we didn't have to worry about anything that day. It was yeah. all getting done for us, and we were just, I mean, it's just a crazy how well that went
yeah.
compared to what it could have been
right.
Through all the support that we had.
Yeah, and the reason why I asked is because, like, and I can imagine more for a lady that, you know, you you dream of your big wedding day your almost your whole life. Like there are people who have Pinterest boards even like in high school of like their dream wedding.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine like I don't even know how this would unfold if that would have happened to me, but like being able to pivot your wedding date and then move it up and then plan it overnight, you know, I think that's just a testament to like the people that God provides you with, because like there's no way that you're gonna plan that wedding without people who are just centered on God.
Yeah. Right?
Like so true. There's just gonna be a lot of conflict. There's just gonna be a lot of like, I think this way's better. And
people
maybe
not willing to drop what they're doing.
Right.
For that.
And then like,
I mean, it's a wedding. And then it's not like a,
you know, like the I don't know, bridezillas or whatever, you know, like there's just a lot of like, when you think of weddings, like it's already a stressful thing to think about to begin with. And then to add the whole, you can only have 10 people and then you have to do it like really quickly. And then you have to do it overnight. And then you have to get everybody on board. Like how many people did you have? Like 10 people?
Well, we had 50 because we made it like 2 days before what they hit the 10, but we had 300 people coming to our wedding originally. Yeah.
But imagine like getting 50 people to be on the same page.
Right.
And then execute.
Night.
Yeah. You know, but that just shows like, you know, like how great God's people are is like they're willing to do that and be selfless to help someone.
Yes.
Unfortunately, like it's not the best case, but to make it as best as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, definitely.
Funny story. So Bridget's like, hey, these are my pants. Go get them. So all of us groomsmen have to go get pants, right, like the day before. And I go and pick them up. Well, the lady forgot to take the security thing off the pants. I didn't pull them out of the bag till we got here to the wedding place. And I'm like, Reggie, I still got this tag on, bro. They're like, it's all right, just...
Did you have to Photoshop it out or something?
No, I don't know. They wouldn't let me pull it off because, you know, it sprays ink everywhere.
Yeah, that's
crazy. So I'm walking around with this huge, like, ankle weight on.
the security thing does that?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's about, like,
it looked like he was on house arrest.
Yeah.
That's so crazy,
man.
Yeah. That's how I know some of those things don't work because the people leave them on all the time.
The stuff you learn.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, talking about a little bit about more like Collinsville too. Like it's been, besides like getting married and like getting married and stuff. Other than that, over in Collinsville, like I said, it was a huge faith builder, but it was really cool and it's been awesome to see all the different type of changes that we've had and stuff like that. Like I said, like Matt would probably know too. Like it can be very stressful and it can be very busy, and you're literally a part of everything, and you might be leading this ministry, and that ministry, but it's awesome to see the growth and to see the other people's lives that are changed. And that's something I've been telling a lot of people lately too. And it's really been reminiscing with me in my head over the past 3 years on how many people's lives have been able to be changed because of those sacrifices that people have made. And I mean, I think it's been amazing. Just really being able to build great friendships with some of the guys over there, and just like seeing some guys venture out into new ministries, venture out into student ministries, and seeing some of the people that we've met since we've been over there venturing out and helping lead in student ministries has been amazing too. And some of my best friends, like being able to have a campus guys house over there and stuff like that, and being able to kind of build that friendship and those just memories is something that I feel like I'll never forget, really. And even being able to help lead and serve in the campus ministry over there has been something that has been amazing, to kind of see people's paths who have been very similar to mine, some different,
right,
and seeing their lives being able to be changed. And so many of the girls also, man.
Yeah.
And seeing some of the, even like the adults with like June Bitterman and Reggie Conley, and seeing them like just be able to pour into so many people over there. And because that's where they grew up, that's where they were, that's where they came from, and seeing them to be able to change their environment is amazing to see. And there's so many things happening, and it's only because of the sacrifice and because those people putting God in the center of their lives.
Yeah.
The coolest thing for me about the church plant in general is like when you get on a church plant and then you reach out to somebody and you disciple them, and then they go through the Bible studies, and then they commit themselves to a relationship with God. The coolest thing for me is like seeing those people from scratch almost become ministry leaders.
Yes.
And like that it's just, I don't know how to explain it. And, you know, it's kind of harder. And I love the Crossings Wentzville with all my heart. But when you have so many people, it's kind of harder to, not hard, but it's like you don't see that as vibrant as it is when it's on a church plane because it's so little, you know, but it also has its cons, right? Like, like if someone's struggling, the whole church knows.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a pros and cons, but like, it's just so cool.
It magnifies both the really amazing things and the not so good things.
Yeah. And like, I don't remember how many I think you guys left with like 50, but like, just like the idea of like having 50 people or 49 people go with you on this journey, you know, you go through like the highs and lows together and like to be able to overcome that. Like, you know, we're kind of still working through it, but like one of the things I think about with Collinsville is that you guys have been meeting at a hotel, right? And setting up every Sunday like I have, which by the way is really weird that we're on this coronavirus because I've been setting up every single Sunday for the last 5 years, and then I haven't done it in the last 8 weeks.
It's weird.
So it is weird. But sorry. But anyways, but then like one of the things that you guys were working on was getting a building, and then that building you got, which was an incredible blessing, right? Like that's another story. But then it had like a lot of its problems in the inside. Like you had to pass a lot of inspections, and we all know how Illinois is, so like it's a different kind of standard.
Yes.
Right. But then like now you guys are building that building. And you guys are going to be able to meet in that really soon. But like, I can imagine being in that group of 49 or 50 people saying, wow, we graduated from the hotel.
Yeah.
And now we're at a building and we can do so much more. Yeah. But like, I can just imagine like there's no way you guys would have been able to meet at that building if you guys didn't do it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you all put in the work together to do that. And
yeah.
I don't know, like when you think of it like that and you think of it like as far as like disciple making and outreach, you know, doing it together, it just seems much more gratifying versus like when you're kind of doing it on your own. And it wasn't actually designed to be done by itself, right?
It's
designed to be done in, at the very least, in pairs or in groups with other disciples.
Yeah.
But it's gratifying to see like the lows become highs, you know, especially in such a smaller group where everything is magnified.
Yeah.
And you have to have that teamwork at the same time, especially when coming on the church plant. You got 35 to 40 people that are trying to start a church. And like you're saying, like there's going to be those times that you need everybody, all hands on deck type thing. Mm-hmm. And I think those times are the times that build those relationships the most. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a lot of times. I mean, there's going to be times to talking with somebody about the problems. Whether it could be problems in relationships that you have, people that you're trying to give a relationship with God to, something in your personal, whether it's a marriage or a friendship or something like that, and you're talking to them till 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or they have a problem going on, you're going to talk to them till 2 a.m. because even though you got to go to work in the morning because you know that someone has done that for you, or you know that that's how that relationship is going to grow, and it's super cool to kind of have that feeling, you know what I'm saying? And I know I've said that it can be very stressful and tiring sometimes, but at the same time, I wouldn't change anything. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't change anything or any of the sleepless nights or any of the things that can be stressful sometimes, because we wouldn't have, in Collinsville, we wouldn't have people like Sean and Kara Trollard who were able to come into through the campus ministry and now serving as leaders in our junior high ministry. And we wouldn't have their family who live in Collinsville be able to start coming to the church and their nephews and nieces and now seeing some of their family again in relationship with God. We wouldn't have people like that.
Yeah. And we talked about this on the Fernando Sucre episode that, you know, with him going to Columbia, it's a lot harder to lean on some of your friends over in Wentzville.
Yep.
You know, and for me being on the Inner Belt, it's still hard, but it's not as hard because, like, you know, Wentzville's only still 40 minutes from where I'm at. And some of my closest friends live in St. Charles, which is actually like 10 minutes from where I'm at. Right. But then like when you think of Collinsville, how long's the drive? Like an hour, and a half, maybe? Maybe not an hour and a half.
55 minutes, an hour.
Yeah, like an hour. And so it's like if you're going through some stuff at like 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock in the morning, like it's not like you can just get in your car and go on an hour road trip to Wentzville or to the Inner Belt to like talk it out with some of your friends, right? So it's like really important for you guys to really lean on each other because like it's much easier to make that drive to maybe Jake Sin's house that's maybe like 15 minutes away, mm-hmm. 10 minutes away at 11 o'clock at night. And mm-hmm. you could really, really rely on him.
Yeah.
And that's one of the hardest parts, I think, too, especially when coming on the church plant. I feel like you have a lot of built up great relationships here at mm-hmm. the Crossings in Wentzville, which is awesome, right? And I remember getting, I guess, chosen or whatever to go on the church plant. And I had to get into, I came into a group of people that I didn't really know that well.
Yeah.
So that was already hard for me to start off with.
Yeah.
And like leaving, not leaving people necessarily, but like stepping away and not being able to have the, as a daily relationship with the same people like Arjun Ashley and their kids who I've seen grow up and have lived with Arjun Ashley and built a great relationship with them, like a mother and father figure to me. Mm-hmm. And having to leave some of my best friends, I mean, including Ryan here, and we've known each other since, I don't remember, my freshman year of high school and done a lot of things together. And I used to sleep at his house, live at his house, basically, for real.
Right.
Yeah.
Right when we moved over to Wentzville, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like trying to walk away from that was very hard. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like I've built some of the best friendships I've ever had at the same time in Collinsville.
Yeah.
Because just like, I forget what that passage is, but like, just like everybody says all the time, like no matter where you are, no matter what you're going through, or no matter where you are or what point of your life you're in, the storms are still going to come, right? But I can't consistently run and talk to Ryan or run and talk to Arjun Ashley all the time, right? Yeah. But I do, it's not that I don't have people though. I still have right. Jake. I still have Wes. I still have Alameda and David and J-Tone and a bunch of people around me, you know what I'm saying, to be able to go to and talk to about things and still support me and love me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's why relationship got us done with in teams.
Yeah, I mean, so I completely made a blunder earlier when we were talking about those shows, because there's one series that I did watch, and that's The Chosen, which amazing, and I like had a knot or a lump in my throat each episode, because I was trying not to cry. But you know, when we're talking about the church plants, and it really does bring you back to Acts 2, which just that closeness that the first century church had, mm-hmm. and everything that they had, they shared, and no one was in need. So I think like what you guys were talking about, something that is so special whenever a church is started, is it just magnifies the relationship, it magnifies the teamwork. So when I watch The Chosen and just looking at that core group of people, you know, some churches really do. I mean, The Crossings like started out with just less than 12 people for sure, you know, and so just seeing that family and that doing life together is really a special thing. But yeah, Reggie, like it's, I know we're all encouraged, and I mean, I don't know, I'm just always admiring of people that choose to make that decision to leave what is familiar and truly leave what's comfortable. And I've said this so many times, and to go out into a new place, but
and
do it all.
Completely different demographic, too.
Completely different demographic, absolutely. Yeah, and do it all for the glory of God, you know?
Yeah.
So
I think one thing to add, too, on the church plant is like, yeah, the plants have that Acts type of relationship, but also like, making sure that you're maintaining that within the plants, like
right.
together.
Oh, too, yeah, you know? For sure.
Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, you might not be able to always run to those people that you built relationships and that you moved away from, but they're always going to be there.
Right.
And you know, they still have your back.
And the cool thing about that, too, and I think of like just some of the relationships I've had or I have in Wentzville, is that, you know, you work harder for them, which kind of like adds more genuineness to your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's not, and man, I'm looking at like Columbia and Collinsville, and it's like, man, that actually really is far. And I'm over here complaining about how far the Innerbelt is. But like, you know, I think of that, and it's like, if, and you know, I like you, like you, if you really wanted to have a relationship with someone, or you really want to hang out with them, like that 40-minute drive is nothing compared to what the fruit of that relationship becomes, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think, I don't know, I look at back, and I've mentioned this already, like, you know, Shannon and I, like, one of our closest friends is this couple, Tim and Christian, and they live out in Wentzville, and, you know, we, like, they're a big part of our lives, and, you know, they're a bigger part in our kids' life. Like, we want our kids to know them as, like, they're, like, people they can rely on, and if mm-hmm. we want them to have that relationship, then, you know, that 40-minute drive is just nothing
right
compared to like.
And you're going to figure out a way to make that
exactly
that happen.
Exactly. Know? And you take for granted like how lucky it is to be close to someone. Like whenever like I was in the campus ministry here in Wentzville, it's like, man, or even a better example, like thinking about being on campus, like I can literally just walk down the hall, knock on somebody and then hang out with instantly four people.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I can go to the cafeteria, find a table, and then like 50 other people will gather around me because, you know, we have that close relationship. And it was so easy. Like, and I thought, man, I didn't really take advantage of that. But now it's like, I eat with my family, like the four people. I got kids throwing food at me, and like, you know, like I have the army, the dad shirts with like the marks on my shoulders, right? And it's like, man, I really love my kids and I love my family. Don't get me wrong, but like I really miss like the easiness of like just showing up somewhere and
mm-hmm.
there's a whole people like a bunch of people congregating around you.
Yeah,
you know, because it's easy.
And yeah.
Now you just got to work harder for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, dude, this has been fun. So we always ask one last question, which is, you know, knowing all that you know now, what three things would you... Wait, is it three things?
Not three things.
Whoa, dang, bro.
Wow, why was I thinking three
is
things?
Is this your first time on the show?
I think it might be. First time in a while.
What?
Just kidding. That I was testing you. Knowing all that you know now, what would you tell your younger self? There it is. Hopefully I can close this thing
three
out.
Three things?
Like, yeah, no, not three things. Just one thing. Just one thing.
Anything.
What would I tell my younger self? I would tell my younger self, first off, to always give people a chance, for sure.
That's good.
Always give people a chance in your life, in your heart. I would say, don't let your fear control you. That's my favorite Bible passage, Joshua 1:9. Never have fear, be discouraged, for your Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And that's one thing that helps me a lot going forward. And I will always say, never let your fear control you. And always, I would say, give God a chance in your life, for sure. Give God a chance in your life. Never let your fear control you. And just consistently not letting the thoughts of insecurity or the thoughts of what somebody else could say or what somebody else could do affect how you're going to move and how you're going to make moves in your life.
Yeah.
And in your relationship with God, don't let that happen. Always focus on God and trust in God's people. And
yeah,
my life would be totally different if I did that right away.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the cool thing about that question is because, you know, it's not like I really and truly don't think any of us sitting at this table or anyone that we've had on would say, I wish I could just go back and change everything. Like as painful as our past is, it is God has used that and has gotten us to where we are today.
Yep.
So really that question is honestly kind of designed for our listeners, you know, designed for those out there that are struggling at whatever point they are in their life, if they're needing help or needing some sort of guidance or encouragement. It's that answer. Like, man, I've been there. Don't make that decision, you know.
And it's never too late.
It's never too late. So that's good. And I like what you said about give people a chance, because you asked that question earlier about kind of like believing the love that other people give you or not believing it. And then you said it's maybe sometimes you've not had anyone to trust.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And sometimes trusting means you're going to get your heart broken. But sometimes, too, it means that you're gonna find healing. So, Reggie, thank you for being here. It is 10 o'clock at night, and you still have like an hour drive home. But once again, that shows just your willingness and I think just a want to like tell people about how good God is. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks for letting me come on. It's been an honor.
For sure. Well, on behalf of myself and the team, I got it right.
All right.
On behalf of myself and the team, this is us signing off. So good night and good day, good morning, whatever. Yeah.
See you.
See ya.
Peace.
So by now, your coffee cup is probably pretty low, so I'll keep this short. Thank you for listening in. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and leave a comment. We'd love to hear how these stories are impacting your life. For more content like this, you can follow us at Brewing Narrative on Facebook and Instagram.